Back together again, you and I wrapping up a very busy week, Friday, December 9th, 2022 on Connecticut Today. We talked about a verified start date for the state's recreational marijuana sales. CBIA, Connecticut Business and Industry Association head Chris DePentima discussed the fallout of a lost Pentagon contract at Sikorsky Aircraft. And Columbus Leadership Award winner Barbara Rogo of Bridgeport talk to us about her years of experience around the greater Bridgeport area. January 10th. Yes, January 10th. Day after my son's birthday, by the way. January 10th. 1/10/2023. What am I talking about? Write it down. Circle it. Get a sticky note there. Get a post-it note. Stick it on your refrigerator. Mark it in your Outlook software, your planner, your calendar, whether you use Google Calendar, Yahoo Calendar, Outlook, whatever you use. January 10th. January 10th. What do I talk of? January 10th. That is the day, and that's what, 10? What is that, 10? What are we on the 9th here? December 31st, 22. And 10. So 32 days. 1 month, essentially, I'm sorry, from tomorrow. 1 month from tomorrow, licensed Connecticut cannabis retailers, or if you prefer, marijuana retailers, will be permitted to begin selling a limited amount of their product, up to a quarter of an ounce per transaction, to adults, or adults if you prefer, to adults at least 21 years old, January 10th. So that's it. So that is when the long anticipated beginning of retail sales begin. January 10th, that's according to the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection. The Consumer Protection Department is, of course, running. They have been entrusted as one of the main people running the marijuana retailing program. Sales can be enough. If you want to line up, if you want to make this like, you know, Black Friday, like this is what you've been longing for years. If you're really into weed, if you're really into, you know, that stuff, sales can begin promptly. I'll even give you the time. How about that? On January the 10th, 1 month from tomorrow, 10 a.m., so 10 a.m. Now, what day of the week is that? Hang on. Let me see. Let me just pop up the PC calendar here. January 10th is it's a Tuesday. So there you go. So you know what you can do? Like Monday, the 9th, you can start walking around the office saying, oh, God, my throat. Oh, my throat. God. You can go to the boss and say, I got a little tickle, wink, wink, in my throat. I don't know, boss. You think I should maybe, geez, I don't know. It's the new year. I don't want to make everybody sick. You know, we have that triple demic out there, boss of mine. We've got COVID. We've got RSV. We've got the influenza. I don't know. Tomorrow, January 10th. Maybe a good day for me to take off. Huh? What do you think? I'm sorry. I jest. But again, there's only going to be a limited amount available. So, you know, there may be some people who are going to say, yeah, well, you know, I've got what they call it now, PTO, personal time off. Yeah, I've got the beginning of the year. Why not use it on January 10th? The first vendors to come online will be hybrid retailers. And we talked to you about this. In other words, these are the retailers that already sell marijuana to the, I don't know, 50, 60,000 people who have marijuana cards in the state. For some, there's a whole bunch of, it started out with just a few medical conditions, and it's expanded now to pain and some psychiatric conditions and glaucoma and all that. So that's who it's going to be. It's going to be started with the hybrid retailers. The initial limitations, by the way, I'm reading this from the Connecticut News Junkie, on recreational sales are designed to make sure there remains an adequate supply to support both markets. So that's what they're saying here. They don't want, so in other words, they're putting limits on the opening sales here. So they don't want anybody going in there. And by high, yes, how much would you like, sir? Give me a pound. Yeah, really? What, sir? I just had a pound. Well, you know, sir, it's $7 an ounce or a gram. I don't care. I got the money. Let's go. Come on. Dish it up there. That's what they don't want. So we'll see how that shakes out. Medical marijuana patients are permitted to buy up to 5 ounces per month, according to the Department of Consumer Protection. Now, here's the thing you better worry about starting on January 10th. Because don't take this from me if you don't believe it. Look it up, because it's out there. I shouldn't say every, but a lot of law enforcement people say, you know, from all over the country, what do they say? They say, well, part of the problem that they have seen, which they claim evens out and goes away after a while, but they claim that part of the problem they've seen is that you have a lot of people who are going to start because they did, because it wasn't legal beforehand and there wasn't the over temptation to do this. There's a good notion that they're going to start driving high, and just about maybe not every state, but just about every state that has initiated legal recreational for adults only marijuana, there is somewhat of an uptick in accidents and moving violations or whatever from when that started and people starting to drive high. So on January 10th, you can be celebratory if you'd like. You can take the day off, make it an all-day event. Take mom, take the family, go out to, and we have a list of the areas that are going to be selling at these specific locales. I can give you that a little bit later. But the limit is a quarter of an ounce.
Dude, that's like nothing.
So, and I wouldn't know. I haven't smoked in years and years and years. But Michelle Siegel, who is the State Department of Consumer Protection Commissioner, said, quote, "We thought a quarter of an ounce for retail sales would be a reasonable number to hopefully avoid shortages, but still allowing people to buy a reasonable amount." How many joints can you get out of a quarter of an ounce? Does anybody know that? Eric, can you look that up if you get a chance? I know I've made you do this a couple of times before, but how many joints in an ounce, and then give me a quarter of that? Now, I don't mean give it to me, but give me the number there. So just as a public service here, if you're going to celebrate and take part, your initial purchase is going to have to be in one of the state's selected medical marijuana outlets, and you only get a quarter of an ounce. So, you know, if you're giving it to mom and dad and the kids and the dog, I'm kidding, relax. It's a joke. Michelle Siegel said a quarter of an ounce could be a few pre-rolled cigarettes. I believe, Madam Commissioner, you meant joints, but she used cigarettes. And maybe an edible or some combination of different products. I don't know. Should we have some Connecticut Today edibles? That might be good, because starting January 10th, I can, a Freudian slip there, I can go out and get the retail stuff and mix it in some meatballs, right? Can we do that? Think of the culinary things that are going to happen on January 10th. You can get, even though it's only a quarter of an ounce, not a lot, you can, you know, what can you do with that? You can put it in, what, some brownies, I get, the old pot brownies. You can do meatballs. Who needs oregano when you have that, right? Gee, Nana, your meatballs are really good. That's nice, I told you. I knew you'd like. And think of the great, Think of the magnificent, honest to God, think about, because I had some the other night, not the spiked kind, but think about the magnificent pesto sauce you could crank up. Mmm, well, the pesto is really good tonight, sweetheart. Yes, I know, isn't it? So what do you think? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And by the way, on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WICC600, I have a question. I posted a Friday question. We'll have some fun with this. The state has announced that recreational marijuana sales will begin on January 10th. Are you planning to partake? You know what I mean. Listen, if it's going to be legal now, so maybe some of you say, well, I haven't done it a few years, but I'm going to sit home, sit in the big leather chair, not going out tonight, not going out first part of tomorrow. Everything will be nifty. What do you think? And are you worried, too? See, I am a little worried, and I know the first segment here was kind of tongue-in-cheek, but I am a little worried, and there are going to be people, because there always are, who are going to operate motor vehicles and just be out and about, you know, when they shouldn't. And that kind of worries me. Are you worried about that at all? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. So the era of medical marijuana being supplanted by recreational pot coming on the 10th of January, 2023. Well, there was a collective kind of uh-oh a few days ago when it was revealed that Sikorsky Aircraft apparently did not win a new contract for the next generation military helicopter. Now, we'll see if that does come to fruition. Talking to some people who actually work there, said, well, you know, if this new chopper from Bell doesn't work out, the military could go back to Sikorsky, but you have to assume this is not good news. And it's, again, when these contracts don't happen, there is a ripple effect, and people are already worried and wondering about the ripple effect from local retailers who service people who work at the plant to manufacturers and subcontractors all across the state. We're welcoming right now Chris DePentima to the show. Chris is head of CBIA, the Connecticut Business and Industry Association, and I know Chris has some concerns about this as well. Chris, good afternoon. It's Paul here at WICC. How are you?
I'm well, Paul. Thanks for having me on. It's good to talk to you and your listeners.
Well, thanks. Appreciate it. Boy, Chris, what were your thoughts when you heard this, knowing that this is a big contract that at least on the face of it indicates it's not coming to Sikorsky?
Honestly, Paul, shocked right off the bat. It was really almost knocked me over. I had been in manufacturing for 20 years before coming to CBIA a couple years ago. You know, spent my whole life, born and raised here in Connecticut, and synonymous with, you know, the military is Sikorsky and the Black Hawk helicopters. Of course, he's had this contract since the 1970s. And while this was a bid for the next generation, if you will, the new version of the Black Hawk, it was just kind of shocking to hear that Sikorsky wasn't awarded the contract with that long history that they've had. And again, coming from manufacturing here in Connecticut, knowing not only what it means for Stratford and Bridgeport and the thousands of employees at Sikorsky, but the hundreds of suppliers that are here in Connecticut to Sikorsky and the suppliers to those suppliers. You were mentioned in your intro, it's not just those folks making parts for Sikorsky, but it's those folks providing services for Sikorsky and for the supply chain, whether it's accountants, lawyers, construction contracts, service providers throughout the state. It has a ripple effect. So, you know, once I was overcome by the shock, I thought, okay, well, there's still an opportunity for Sikorsky to keep this contract through an appeal process, and I'm sure they'll look at what the award was based off of. But this could have significant implications for Sikorsky, Connecticut suppliers, and really the Connecticut economy as a whole.
And Chris, you know, exactly what you said, and I try to remind myself every time I drive over the bridge and look down at the Sikorsky plant there right on the river or anywhere in Connecticut, oh, yeah, that's where they make the helicopters. But They don't make all the parts and all the stuff that goes into the helicopters like every military contractor. And I don't think, Chris, from time to time, people understand that, that everything to an engine, to a bolt or whatever, or, you know, all these specialty parts, it really is kind of a trickle-down effect, is it not? When something gets ended or added, all of a sudden, what do the dominoes do? Do they fall down or do they stand up?
Yeah, you know, folks probably don't realize how robust the manufacturing supply chain system we have in Connecticut. We're known for Sikorsky and Electric Boat and certainly Raytheon Pratt Whitney up in the Hartford area. But really, Connecticut's bread and butter is about 4,000 manufacturers across the state, the average size of which is about 20 to 25 employees. And in Sikorsky's case, they had committed a few years back when they reached an agreement with the state to stay in Connecticut to spend $350 million. Now it's up to $400 million a year with that Connecticut supply chain. And just last year, they reached a new agreement with the state in December where they received some state tax incentives in order to be, if they won this contract, in order to be more cost competitive. And they would ratchet up the spend from $400 million to $750 million with the Connecticut supply chain. So that's tens of thousands of jobs across the state of Connecticut that this contract would have supported beyond the thousands of jobs in Sikorsky. And of those tens of thousands of jobs in the supply chain directly, for every one manufacturing job, they support about five other supporting jobs.
Wow.
And why is that? Manufacturers tend to spend locally. They tend to buy locally. You know, the manufacturing employees tend to go out and eat locally. They just spend at their dry cleaners. They spend at the restaurants. They spend, you know, coming into work in the morning at the gas stations. So for every one manufacturing job, we create five other jobs here in Connecticut. That multiplier effect is bigger in Connecticut than it is in many other states. And it's why the state government for many years has been trying to grow the manufacturing industry in Connecticut. So when you think about thousands of jobs at Sikorsky, tens of thousands of jobs in the supply chain, and then multiply by that by another four or five jobs that are supported, you know, we're talking big numbers here, Paul. And that's the impact on really this decision.
Chris DePentima is the guest, head of the Connecticut Business and Industry Association, talking about, you know, what has happened so far, the reaction of what could happen down the road, the ripple effect of Sikorsky, at least at the outset, not winning this military contract for the next generation of military helicopter here. So, Chris, what have you been hearing from people? I know you've probably over the past few days have been talking about this. You can try to employ all the people you want, but if the work isn't there, that's just, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and that's really the biggest disappointment here because, you know, since COVID, the work has been there for our manufacturers. It's been an interesting couple of years as we've come out of COVID that the manufacturers here in the state are seeing more demand for their products and services than they saw even pre-COVID. In fact, we have 40% more job openings in manufacturing in Connecticut today than we did pre-pandemic. So they've just done a great job going out and securing the demand for their products. But now here comes a decision from the military that basically can take some of that demand away, something that our manufacturers haven't been faced with really since the 2008-09 recession. And so it's that's where the concern comes. You know, they've been really struggling the past couple of years, not with the demand, but for filling that demand, you know, fulfilling that demand, and that the manufacturers have been struggling to get the employees they need to fulfill the demand, so struggling to get the supplies that they need. As you know, there's been a huge global supply chain crisis, and obviously dealing with just inflation and cost increases. But they have not been struggling with the demand itself. But now this is that, while it's a longer-term decision because the Black Hawk will still go on for a few years, it is one that then now makes the businesses think, okay, what happens to that demand? And I have to go out and backfill it somehow. Sikorsky is going to have to deal with that as well. How does Sikorsky, if they truly don't get this contract, if they appeal it and lose, or if they decide not to appeal it, how are they going to backfill that demand to keep those employees in Stratford and Bridgeport, to keep that facility full? And obviously they want to grow as an organization as well. So that's significant, and that's why I know Sikorsky is a great company and a strong fighter, and I know the supply chain in the Connecticut economy and folks like CBA are really hopeful that there's an opportunity for them to appeal this contract and maybe reverse the decision.
Chris, finally, other than the Sikorsky decision and those suppliers, what's the other view of the manufacturing lay of the land here in the state? I get a lot of callers to this show, and we talk about it, you know, WICC, Industrial Capital of Connecticut, and a lot of my listeners harken back to the days when factories were full in Bridgeport, and, you know, the blue-collar person could make a really nice living and retire comfortably. You and I, though, those days are long gone. So how do we really stand here? Is Connecticut doing well enough in kind of this new era of manufacturing?
We're doing incredible in manufacturing, quite honestly. Our businesses have really pivoted to a lot of innovation, whether that's robotics, automation, but ways to basically be the most efficient facilities they can in the world. We have one of the most productive workforces in the world as well, one of the most innovative workforces in the world. And because our companies primarily compete on the skills, knowledge, and capability of the workforce and the equipment that they have, we don't compete as a low-cost state. We're able to really, you know, do incredible things in Connecticut. And as a result, as I mentioned, the industry has been growing. It's just a matter now of finding the people to fill some of these open jobs. But those blue-collar jobs now are jobs that, you know, average wages in manufacturing is about $100,000 a year.
Wow.
That.
It is that high? Wow.
About $101,000 last year was the average wages when you took the wages paid by the number of manufacturers in Connecticut divided over the number of employees. There's about 160,000 employees working in manufacturing in Connecticut today. That number could be closer to 170,000. If we could fill these open jobs. And it's pretty much the largest, second largest sector that we have in Connecticut behind financial and insurance services. So it's a growing sector. It's pivoted. And like I said, now toward the newer technologies that are out there, and that pivot requires different skill sets. It requires programmers and engineers that are comfortable with computers and really innovative technologies. But our manufacturers have stepped up, and there's a lot of great state programs out there to support them. Now we just need the people in the state to get into manufacturing and to realize how great a profession it is.
The website, CBIA.com, CBIA.com, the Connecticut Business and Industry Association. The head of CBIA, Christy Pentima, has been the guest. Chris, thank you. Good to chat with you. We'll reconnect down the road, I'm sure. Thank you.
Stay well.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Chris. All right, there you go. So I said, you know, this Sikorsky losing this contract, or we should say not being awarded the contract. You know, you bid. You don't really lose a contract. Once you have it, you get it. You bid for a new contract. But, you know, maybe like Chris said, Sikorsky does engage in maybe an appeal process. Who knows how that would work? But large ripple effects on this one. Thanks to Chris. And, of course, we always hear on WICC on this show in the afternoon, Melissa in the morning, and the Lisa Wexler Show, 10 to noon every Monday through Friday. We'd like to call out and honor folks who are making a difference in the community. Many of you may know these same people. Recently, the Council of Italian-American Societies of Greater Bridgeport honored 8 area leaders with the Columbus Leadership Awards. It happened on the 30th. They presented 8 area Italian-Americans with the John A. Arcudi Esquire Award for their professional success and their service to others. We have one of those honorees with us right now. She was born and continues to live in Bridgeport. She has a master's in public administration and a 6-year in educational leadership. She's retired from the Bridgeport Board of Ed as director of evaluation and research. She also worked as a classroom teacher, district mathematics consultant, and director of professional development. She was also into politics as well. Basically, another guest whose resume is far better than mine and always will be. Barbara Rogo joins us this afternoon to talk about herself and the honorees as well. Hi, Barbara. It's Paul here at WICC. How are you?
Thank you, Paul. I'm doing quite well. Thank you for inviting me to be on your show.
That's a heck of a resume, Barbara. When did you have time to do anything else? I'm reading your resume going, wow, that's pretty impressive.
Well, you know, they always say if you want something done, give it to a busy person.
And I guess that worked over the years.
Yeah, and since I've been retired, and I've been retired for a few years now, I've had time to devote to public service and some nonprofit organizations as well.
Now, you were one of the eight people honored at the Toshua Knowles Banquet Facility before about 180 guests. How did you find out you were going to get this award, and what did you think when they said you were one of the honorees this time around?
Chris Caruso, with whom I've been working on various projects, called and asked if I would accept the award. I was quite honored, especially given the company I was in. And quite surprised, honestly, because although I've been involved in a lot of nonprofits and community service, I've just only in the past couple of years become more and more invested in the Council of Italian American Societies and the contributions of Italians in general to both Connecticut, Bridgeport, Connecticut, and the country. People of my generation and my parents and my grandparents did their very, very best to assimilate. And I think in the process, we kind of let our cultural heritage go by the wayside a little bit. So I'm just beginning to rediscover, not that I ever let it go completely, but just beginning to rediscover the richness of Italian culture.
And we are talking about eight Italian Americans honored recently at the Toshua Knowles Banquet Facility in front of almost 200 guests. They received the John A.R. Cudi Esquire Award for their professional success and service to others. Those eight, Mario Bartoli of Trumbull, Frank Generini of Milford. We've had Frank on the program here in his connection to the Barnum Festival. Judy Morella of Shelton, Michael Parente of Bridgeport, Vincent Porcini of Fairfield, Tammy Onofrio Orfino, rather, Tammy Orfino Silva of Milford, Maurizio Vaselli of Easton, and our guest, Barbara Rogo of Bridgeport. Barbara, you've had such a resume here and done things in education, in politics, in the social areas. Now you're getting more into the Italian culture, kind of like you said, rediscovering that. You've had a pretty interesting and, I would say, fruitful life here. What are some of the things that stood out to you? Why do you think you were awarded, you were honored here? Did you expect to have the impact on people that you obviously have had?
No. I think oftentimes those of us who volunteer without any expectation of having an award. We do it because of the impact that we might have. For example, the Bridgeport Field of Dreams Foundation is a huge part of my life now. And I got involved in that because I am once an educator, always an educator. Mm-hmm. But as far as the mission, and I want to get a plug in here for them.
Sure.
The Bridgeport Dreams Foundation is to support Bridgeport Public School athletes' ability to participate and compete with dignity, pride, and personal integrity. And over the past 8 years or so, we've raised about $400,000, which has gone directly back into programs for Bridgeport Public School students, scholar athletes. So, but beyond that, Len Paoletta, who is head of Baggio, the Bridgeport Area Cultural Italian Organization, and Chris Caruso, whom I'm sure you know through the consul. We started working together back when the Bridgeport Board of Education was going to change Columbus Day, do away with Columbus Day, and thank goodness, hopefully it continues, we got the name changed to Italian Heritage Day as opposed to completely eliminating. And then through Baccio, Len Paoletta has been working to promote Italian culture for years. And I worked with him in the 80s when he was mayor. I was on the Common Council, and then I was on the Board of Tax and Apportionment. Mm-hmm. So I've known him. I've also known Chris forever. And between the Baccio, which sponsored the big night not too long ago, November 1st, and is sponsoring a dinner of the Seven Fishes the end of this month, December 19th, the three of us, as well as a few others, are hoping to put together a festival of cinema, Italian cinema, sometime in the spring.
That'd be really cool. Absolutely.
Yeah, so we're partnering with a few other agencies, and we hope to get more people, not just Italians, involved in seeing the richness and recognizing the richness of Italian culture. You know, my grandfathers both stepped off Ellis Island and directly into the Pennsylvania coal mine.
Mm.
And I think that like many others, including my father, who actually came to Bridgeport for factory work, they nurtured this very strong commitment to work, education, family, faith, country. And I think it's up to us, my generation and future generations, to continue that commitment.
Absolutely. And Barbara, it's interesting because, you know, you mentioned the Columbus Day controversy, and I don't hold back when I talk about that here. But as I always say when I talk about that, some people in some way, shape or form, Barbara, and I say this delicately so people will understand, it's not just about a statue. The statue right now is almost an ancillary thing that diverts attention from the things that you just mentioned about the rich Italian culture and heritage, particularly in the Bridgeport area. And I think people don't step back and take a broader look at that issue as much as they should.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because in addition to the Bridgeport Board of Education, I also taught at Housatonic Community College math. I'm a first person for about 20 years. And in 45 years of being in classrooms, I never, ever, ever once would ever bring up anything of politics. But somebody mentioned in my class one day at my college level something about Michelangelo. And I said, oh. And I said, does anybody know who Leonardo da Vinci, Leonardo and Raphael? And the hands started going up. And one of my students said, put your hands down. Not talking about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, I knew you were going there. I had a feeling you were going there, yeah.
Because so many people, and these are all contemporaries of Columbus, within 100 years or so.
Yeah.
That's all they know about Italian culture. Galileo, you know, or even modern Dante Ferretti, who is an amazing film set designer.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody knows. Morricone, who has done the score for probably hundreds, if not thousands, of movies, they are in the background. I mean, we might know about Martin Scorsese or Francis Coppola, but generally speaking, I think people misguidedly now think in order to elevate their own culture, they have to denigrate others. And I think that's what has happened with Italians. You know, we've been kind of pushed off to the side. We are no longer celebrated. And hopefully that's what, in addition to the Columbus Day Parade and the big night and the Baccio Festival the other night and our film festival in the springtime, hopefully that helped to bring a little bit of our culture to the wider community.
Sure. And Barbara, please, as we get closer to that festival in the spring, keep me updated on it. Give me a call, send me an email, and we will surely have you back on to talk about that, all right?
Oh, I certainly will.
Barbara, thank you. Barbara Rogo of Bridgeport, long resume, politics, volunteering, and also as an educator. She was one of the eight people honored the other night by the Council of Italian-American Societies of Greater Bridgeport. Hey, Barbara, thanks. Take care. Have a wonderful weekend, a good holiday, and we'll definitely talk down the road. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. I so appreciate you having me.
Well, thanks, Barbara. Be good. Barbara Rogo. There you go.